the Transmission, Episode 15, January 11th, 2006.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. Welcome to The Transmission. This is a fan podcast devoted to ABC's hit TV series, Lost. My name is Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're sending this Lost cast direct to you from the island. Mahalo. Thank you for listening.
Mahalo, everybody. And boy, it's great to be back. Lost is back. And after 6 weeks, we're finally kicking off our next delicious batch of new episodes. And I definitely can't wait to talk about this one.
If you're new to the show, here's how The Transmission breaks down. We'll start with a recap of the new episode. We'll talk about what happened for those of you who might have missed some of the action, or just, you know, if you want to relive it again. Then we'll take a few minutes to talk about the episode in greater depth, what we thought, analyzing clues we might have noticed, digging into new answers or even new questions. After that, we go to You All, Everybody, our feedback segment, where we explore some of your comments and observations. Then we move into the Forward Cabin. This is where we stash stuff on upcoming episodes, production news, cast sightings, and stuff like that.
That's where the spoilers go, so if you don't want to know, you'll want to skip that part of the transmission. This week, though, to tempt you behind that curtain, we're going to start off with a couple of cast sightings, some local filming location reports, and even a great little clip with Malcolm David Kelly for those of you who really miss Walt.
Finally, we'll get out of your way and wrap things up with the Lost Line. Even more great stuff from you guys, the listeners.
Personally, I love that listeners are basically having their own conversations there, completely free of our meddling. Of course, after 6 weeks with no Lost, things have been a little quiet. But now, folks, with the decks cleared, we're back on track and we really want to hear from you. Everyone wants to hear from you.
You guys are the best part of our show, so please add your voice to our conversation by calling the Lost Line at 808-356-0127 or send us an email or audio file. You can reach us at lost@hawaiiup.com. That's lost@hawaiiup.com.
If you're too shy to speak, you can still get your ideas out there by posting a comment on our website. Just point your web browser to hawaiiup.com/lost. So there are plenty of ways to reach out and touch someone. Just call 808-356-0127 or send an email to us at lost@hawaiiup.com.
With that out of the way, let's get lost. This is show number 15 of The Transmission, following the episode of Lost that aired on Wednesday, January 11th, 2006. It was the 10th episode of Season 2, and it was entitled The 23rd Psalm.
All right, so what did we see in The 23rd Psalm?
Well, we saw Mr. Echo's flashback and a few developments on the island.
Some pretty big developments, but let's start with the flashback. What did we see happen in Mr. Echo's past?
Well, it starts off when Mr. Echo is a kid. He's playing in Nigeria with a bunch of other kids, and a truck pulls up, and you know the men in the truck have guns, and they take a couple of kids.
Right, they say grab the little one, and they put a gun in his hand, and basically tell him, maybe as a test, to shoot a man, one of the men in the village, and they say go ahead, kill him and shoot him. But obviously he's a little kid and he's not too hot on that. But a bigger kid runs up, pushes him aside, takes the gun away, and without missing a beat, goes ahead and pulls the trigger and kills the man.
And so they ask the kid his name, and he says, Mr. Echo.
Right, and they go, aha, look at Mr. Echo. He's a born killer. And they decide to take him instead of the little kid.
But before they take him, they rip a crucifix off his neck, and they tell him, you're not going to need this anymore.
That's right. And then flash forward a few years, and Echo is an adult, and we see him basically showing up at a house or a meeting place of some kind, and, he meets with some folks who want to sell him some drugs.
Yeah, he meets with a couple of people about heroin. They're selling heroin, and he tells them, well, I'm doing you guys a favor because you can't move it here. I can help you get it out of the country and sell it.
Right, it has to go by air, but the only planes that come in and out are UN planes and Catholic Charities. And, well, basically the guys go ahead and agree to the deal because I guess they've got no other choice. It's clear Mr. Echo is a bit of a badass, and they're getting up to leave, and one of the drug dealers makes a crack. He says, "Well, it's true what they say. You have no soul."
And Mr. Echo doesn't like that, and he kills two of them, and he tells the third one, go tell your friends that I spared your life.
Right. One slash with one knife, and two of them go down, and the kid runs off, and we then see Mr. Echo go to a church, and there's a woman outside selling the
Virgin Mary statues.
That's right. Please buy a Virgin Mary statue to sell some polio vaccine, but a priest comes out of the church, and Mr. Echo says, "I'm here for confession," and we learn that the priest is Mr. Echo's brother.
Right, the little kid who was not able to shoot the man. Obviously, Echo is angling for help. And he wants to go to confession, and his brother refuses. And they talk about what Echo has been doing the past few years.
Yeah, his brother says, "I know who you are and what you've done. And for confession to work, you have to have a penitent heart. And basically, that's not you right now." But Mr. Echo reminds him, you know, "You see that cross around your neck?" Because he had picked it up when he was a kid, and he says, "You were the one that was saved, and so is what I did shooting that man forgiven? Am I an evil person?" And, you know, basically saying that, "I need your help. I need to use your access to church flights to move some merchandise."
And, you know, his brother's not stupid. he knows right away what's happening, and he refuses. But later, you know, Mr. Echo leaves, but later he shows up and he comes with a mob.
Yep, he busts into the church while there are people in there, and they all clear out, and Mr. Echo has a new idea.
He says to his brother, "Well, okay, we don't have to borrow your planes, just make us priests. Sign this piece of paper that says that we're priests, and we'll take the plane and we'll handle the drugs ourselves."
Right. But of course his brother's reluctant to do that, but by this point Mr. Echo has, I guess, run out of patience, and he explains to his brother that, you know, basically he's got no choice. Either you do this or you're going to lose your church.
And but he justifies it by saying that getting the drugs out of the country will keep people from using.
Right, and also that the money from the transaction would allow him to buy those polio vaccines that he's trying to get. So his brother signs the sheet, and Mr. Echo smirks and says, "Well, I guess we're both sinners now." And his brother goes, "Yeah, well, God's going to forgive me." Next, they're at the airfield, and they're loading up the plane, but someone spots a van approaching.
Right. It's Mr. Echo's brother, the priest, and he's warning Mr. Echo very strongly not to get on the plane, or there will be dire consequences.
Right. Please don't go. I'll do anything. I'll take your confession, but just, you know, don't get on that plane. But very soon after that, more vehicles are seen approaching, and I guess it's the Nigerian military or somebody.
Yeah, it's a large gang of military guys in fatigues in a truck with guns, and they open fire on the plane. Mr. Echo's brother is shot in the confrontation. They drag Mr. Echo's brother's body onto the plane.
Mm-hmm. But when Mr. Echo tries to get on the plane, a man inside, someone who I thought was Mr. Echo's, his own henchman, actually, you know, kicks him away, pushes Mr. Echo off the plane, and basically the plane takes off without him. And when the military folks get there, though, and you're thinking, okay, well, now Mr. Echo's in trouble, but
they think he's a priest because he's dressed as a priest, and they address him as father.
Right. They actually think that he's his brother because it was his brother that tipped off the military that this drug plane was taking off. So I guess that's how Mr. Echo might have, in some way, have actually become a priest.
Kind of by default,
right,
sort of.
Right. Or by coincidence or fate. But that was the flashback. Now let's move to the island. A lot of interesting stuff there.
Echo is sitting on the beach, and he has his stick.
Staff.
Yeah, his staff that he's been carving into throughout this season. And he's, you know, he's working on it. And Claire walks up, and she's interested, and she says, "Echo, right?" And She asks him what he's doing, and she says, and he says to her, "Well, I'm carving things in this to remember."
Right. Claire introduces her baby, says that his name is Aaron, and you know, Mr. Echo, of course, immediately picks up that the name Aaron is the biblical brother of Moses. And actually, Claire is no fool either. She knows the story, so she goes, "Oh, well, talk about pressure, right? Poor Aaron. Everyone was comparing him to his brother."
Yeah, why can't you be more like Moses?
But Mr. Echo says, "Well, one thing about Aaron was, you know, Moses had a hard time speaking, so Aaron did all the talking for him." So, oh, you know, Claire goes, "Oh, you're a religious guy. You should talk to Charlie."
And, you know, this kind of piques Echo's interest. And he says, "Well, why do you think he's religious?" And Claire says, "Well, he's got these Virgin Mary statues." And that rings Mr. Echo's bell.
In a big way.
Right.
He totally freaks. And he says, "You know, where did he get this statue?" And, you know, Claire's like, "Whoa, whoa, what's the big deal? It's just a statue." And
to which Echo replies, "No, it's not just a statue." And he busts one open and he shows her the baggies of heroin inside.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of quick scenes. We jump over to the hatch, and Locke is installing some kind of a lock, a combination lock. Locke's mm-hmm. installing a lock.
On a safe.
On a safe for the guns. And Michael walks in and says, "What's going on?" And he says, "Well, you know, with these new folks around here, I figure we need to lock these up, or else, you know, someone's just going to waltz in here and take one."
And he says, "Which I think you're about to do right now, Michael."
Right. Also, we then see Charlie and Jin. They're out fishing together.
Yeah, Charlie. And, well, actually, Jin is fishing. Charlie's being useless.
Yes, Charlie's yapping away and taking advantage of the fact that Jin doesn't understand anything he's saying. And but, you know, he looks up the beach and a very menacing sight.
Yeah, Echo is storming up the beach furiously, and he says to Charlie, "You need to take me to where you found these Virgin Mary statues now."
Right. You know, Charlie says, okay, I'll take you. Let me, you know, I got to tell Claire, though, before she gets the wrong idea."
I got to explain to the little woman.
Right. And Mr. Echo says, "Well, you're going to explain on the way." They go off to see Claire, and clearly she's not happy, and, you know, Charlie tries to explain, but she's not hearing any of it, and, you know, she says, "Just go," so Charlie and Mr. Echo head off to go and find where he found it, but he actually tries to trick Mr. Echo.
He takes him to another spot in the jungle. He says, "Oh, this is where I found it." But, you know, Mr. Echo is no fool. He knows what to look for. There's
right,
no
he actually,
plane.
He specifically says, "Where is the plane?" Well, after slamming Charlie up against a tree, which is definitely a side of him that we hadn't seen on the island. And he says, "Yeah, you know, take me to the plane." And Charlie immediately deduces that clearly he knows more than he's letting on. You know, how did you know about the plane? But, you know, he relents and says, okay, I'll take you to the plane. We cut away briefly to catch up with some of the other folks on the island, of course. There's a scene with Locke and Michael, and they're out doing target practice. They're, teaching Michael how to shoot, basically.
Well, you know, Locke is supposedly teaching Michael how to shoot, but I think Michael knew how to shoot anyway. He's obviously very proficient very quickly.
Well, I mean, the last time Locke tried to teach someone to do something, they could nail it right away. That was Walt in the
Night. That's true.
But anyway, yes. Also, we get to the famous haircut scene.
Kate is cutting Sawyer's hair, and they're bantering in that very Kate and Sawyer way.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells him, "Oh, everybody loves you. Everybody has missed you." And Sawyer says, "Bull Pucky." but he's quickly proven wrong because people start strolling up the beach. Hurley comes by and says, "Glad you're back, man." And him and Michael kind of lock eyes, and Michael says the same thing.
Yeah, which is, you know, Michael says, "I'm glad you're back." And considering how they were going at each other before, that's a significant mention there. But Michael actually has an interesting request there for Kate.
He wants to take Kate's shift. He's not, I guess, not scheduled for hatch duty. But he wants to go in. Obviously, he has, you know, something in mind.
Yeah, he's got a plan. But eventually, we find our way back to Charlie and Mr. Echo traipsing. But eventually, we find ourselves back with Charlie and Mr. Echo traipsing through the forest. And, you know, Charlie's very defensive. And he goes, "You know, it's my brother's fault. You know, I was actually the good guy. And he's the one that got into drugs and started all of these problems. So, you know, don't judge me."
And while Charlie is yammering, they stumble upon a parachute in a tree. and they follow it to a body. A man dressed in a priest uniform, and Mr. Echo checks it out. He looks him over, looks under his shirt, and he says to Charlie, "Well, this is the man that saved my life."
Yeah, and you know, Charlie goes, "Oh, well, you know, that's just great. You know, what a coincidence." And you're telling me that this plane made it from Nigeria all the way here to the middle of the South Pacific. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, they move on after Mr. Echo prays, still looking for the plane, but Charlie admits that, he's a little lost. Charlie says, I was kind of out of it, so it was dark, and I was following Saeed, so I don't know. And Mr. Echo orders him up the tree.
Right, he says, you can probably see better if you're a little higher up, so climb the tree.
But while Charlie is up in the tree, Mr. Echo starts hearing things. And he starts looking around, and there's some rustling in the bushes. And folks, all of a sudden, the ground erupts in all around him, just like we saw in season one. And but now we definitely get a good look at the monster.
It's a lot of smoke. It's a very snake-like wisp of a very thick black smoke.
Absolutely, very creepy, and it comes right at Mr. Echo. But even though it comes right at his face, it hovers inches away. He's just staring up at it in a very familiar way.
Right. He stands stick still and just stares at the thing. And he seems to recognize something about it.
Right. It's crackling and sparking and flashing. And there's definitely things in that cloud of smoke. We'll get to that in a bit. Interestingly enough, even though Charlie says, "Run, Mr. Echo," he doesn't. He stands his ground, and eventually the cloud of smoke just retreats and goes away.
And Charlie's puzzled. You know, he's like, that thing kills, and so why were you just standing there?
And, Mr. Echo goes, "Well, you know, I was not afraid of it at all." And he goes, "Well, I can see that." And, after that that amazing scene, they continue their journey to, you know, Charlie said he saw the plane, so they head off to try and find it.
Meanwhile, back at the hatch, Michael is starting his shift at the computer, and he bangs on the keys a few times because nothing is happening.
Right, he wants to make contact again, obviously. So he's just whacking away at the keys, and eventually a message comes back, a very familiar one.
"Dad."
Right, so Michael types back, "Are you okay?"
"Yes, are you alone?"
And Michael goes, "Yes." Basically, Walt writes back,
"I have to go, they're coming back."
Right. So Michael quickly types, "Where are you?" And the response starts to come back.
"You need to come."
Right. But right before that is finished, Jack walks in. And, Michael's like, "Oop, do, 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 do." And interestingly enough, Jack stops in specifically to tell Michael that
that we're going to, as soon as we can, we're going to go find Walt. We're going to bring him back.
Nobody's forgotten Walt. And of course, Michael clearly has not forgotten Walt either.
But Jack, he kind of moves around the computer so he can see the screen, and you're thinking, he's gonna catch Michael in the act. But by the time Jack gets back there, the screen is blank.
Right. Very, very mysterious. Finally, though, we're back with Mr. Echo and Charlie, and they finally reached the plane, and they climb inside. Mr. Echo sees a bloody handprint inside the door.
His bloody handprint.
Right, from when he was kicked away. He goes in, and he basically finds a body in there.
Right, he rips the shirt off of the body, rips it open, and he sees the cross, the cross that belonged to his brother, and we realize that this is the body of Mr. Echo's brother.
Right, and Charlie walks up and asks if he knows him, and Mr. Echo breaks down and cries. He says, "Yes, this is my brother." And, Charlie actually, he seems genuinely sorry. He says that he's sorry. And when they get out of the plane, Mr. Echo gives Charlie an extra Virgin Mary statue.
Right, for the one I broke, he says.
Right, and he rips a fuel line, and they set fire to the plane. And while they're standing and watching the plane burn, Mr. Echo begins to recite the 23rd Psalm. And interestingly, Charlie joins in as well.
Right.
And while they're reciting the 23rd Psalm and the plane burns, the music rises and we get a brief montage about what's going on elsewhere on the island.
Jin and Sun have brought a peace offering to Anna. They bring her a fish. She's trying to get a fire started.
And yeah, so they give her food. Also, we see Hurley being a helpful guy with
Libby
trying to build a shelter for her. And Libby makes some googly eyes at him.
Yeah, so she seems to be quite taken by Hurley.
I think so. And we also see Kate and Sawyer. You know, Sawyer's appreciating his new haircut. And Jack walks up all friendly-like and actually gives Sawyer some pills, I guess, because he's still recovering.
Yeah, some antibiotics probably.
But after all of those big happy scenes, we catch up with Claire and Charlie.
Claire is kicking Charlie out.
Yep.
I mean, as much as one can be kicked out of a, you know, makeshift shelter.
Right.
She's, you know, set all of his stuff aside and she says to him, well, I can't have you around my baby.
So just go. You know, I can't trust you. You lied and basically can't have a drug addict. Yeah. Around my kid. And so she pushes Charlie away. And late at night, Charlie sneaks away to hide the Virgin Mary statue. But we discover,
well, he pulls back the blanket and we see like six of them
right
in a hole.
So Mr. Charlie has actually been hoarding a lot of those drugs. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the 23rd Psalm, our first new episode in 6 weeks. A lot of details there. But when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what we thought and then specific things that we might have noticed. Well, first things first, Jen, how did you like the 23rd Psalm?
I loved it. It was a great episode.
I agree.
It was definitely worth the wait. I loved the acting. I loved the story. I thought it was a very well-written story. And I really loved how they made this island look like Africa.
Yeah, I guess that was Waipahu or something. But I believe that they were in Nigeria. I agree. I think Adewale's performance was fantastic.
He's great.
You know, just we definitely all of a sudden another side to Mr. Echo there, and a very believable one. Absolutely.
He jumps from peaceful and serene to scary and violent really quickly, and just, you know, he does so much with his eyes.
You know? Not only that, in addition to seeing him as a mean kick butt warlord and seeing him as a peaceful priest, you know, knowing, knowledgeable, wise character, you really saw him get rattled. You know, clearly he was shaken by finding the connection with his brother on the island. And you know, I just, the whole range of things that Adewale was able to depict was just fantastic. Were there little clues or details that you wanted? We'll save the monster, I think, for last. But were there other clues or details that stood out to you?
Well, I kind of liked that whole discussion about, you know, Mr. Echo and Charlie are walking around, and Charlie reveals to Mr. Echo that he was a choir boy. And, you know, Mr. Echo is, he was raised Catholic, and he has issues with faith. And the way that Charlie, you know, talks about his background, it seems to change Mr. Echo's view of Charlie. It seems to kind of change something internally, you know, and after that, the relationship changes. And I think that Mr. Echo sees him more as kind of a friend.
Yeah, someone he can identify with, somebody with the same background, with the conflicts and problems, but, you know, things that he can understand. Yeah, I agree that that there was a bond formed there, even though clearly we're going to be losing some of the bond between Charlie and Claire. I liked a lot of the religious language. I mean, the 23rd Psalm being recited, obviously, was a chicken skin moment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things like when Mr. Echo's brother tells him, don't get on the plane, don't get on the plane, I'll do whatever you want, but bad things will happen. Mr. Echo goes, you know, are you a prophet?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that reminds me of Claire's conversation with the psychic when he suddenly changes his mind and gets really emphatic about Claire having to be on that plane. You have to be on that plane. You have to be on the plane. So I thought that was interesting. I mean,
yeah.
In a way, it seems like Mr. Echo's brother saw something or knew something. And also on that language was when Mr. Echo and his brother were in the church, and Mr. Echo was reminding his brother about why he, you know, why he's okay, why, because, you know, Mr. Echo shot that guy for him. He goes, it was you who was saved. And, you know, that word came up before with Sawyer and Kate when he woke up and he thought that they had been saved. And a lot of people caught on that as well, kind of very redemption-like language.
And then there was that whole Aaron and Moses thing.
That's right. More biblical stories. And on the Aaron thing, I thought that was interesting in the sense that earlier when Charlie asked Claire where she got the name, she said, oh, you know, I really don't know. And, you know, kind of hinting that it might have been put there. But in this case, yeah, she just tells Mr. Echo that, you know, she picked Aaron just because she kind of liked it.
Yeah. And there's some nicknames.
Yep, more Sawyer nicknames. What does he call Hurley there?
Pillsbury.
Pillsbury, which I don't know, you know, they're Stay Puffed as well, so I think there's a theme with him. There was a funny line, too, where Charlie is like, well, how are you going to make me climb this tree? What are you going to do?
You're going to beat me with your Jesus stick.
Jesus stick. And that's a quotable quote there as well. You know, when Locke was making the combination to the gun case, I guess, mm-hmm. I was surprised that I was like, oh, we're going to see the numbers again. But as far as I can tell, none of the numbers in that combination were the numbers. It was almost like they were showing us a specific example of where the numbers could be and then saying, ha-ha, you know, no numbers here.
Well, I mean, the thing about that is, though, is everybody knows the numbers. So why would Locke make a combination using the numbers that everybody already knows anyway?
That's an excellent point. That's right. I mean, the numbers are on the hatch. People who are on a shift in the hatch have to type in the numbers every 108 minutes. So that'd be kind of ridiculous to set the combination on. That's a very good point. So maybe it's not the numbers because of that. That's true. That's true. Although now I'm sure people are going to be theorizing now about numbers that he did use. I think 29 was one, and how those might be significant as well. But good point. Good point. But all right, obviously the big deal, the big clue, the holy cow moment of this episode was the very clear appearance of the monster. So I got to ask you, what did you think about the monster?
It was creepy. That was extremely well done. It could have looked cheesy, but it didn't. And it's obviously something that's supposed to be both terrible and beautiful. You know, the way that now both Echo and Locke have looked at this thing. Mm-hmm.
And Locke did say, you know, I looked into the eye of this island and what I saw was beautiful. And Mr. Echo clearly was shaken, but was not scared as well. What did you think that it was doing? I mean, it comes flying up. It comes right at Mr. Echo, stops right in front of his face. But after it does its little whizzy flashy thing, it goes away. I mean, what was that action?
Maybe it's like sizing him up, kind of trying to determine how big of a threat he is or if he's a good person.
Right. I mean, the closed captioning of that section described the sound as growling and whirring, which, again, kind of mixes organic and mechanical. And I definitely got kind of the scanning sense from what it was doing. Like, it was sizing him up. It was checking him out and determining what to do with him. And although Charlie said that this thing kills, in his case, it found him worthy or, for whatever reason, worth sparing and decided to let him go. Now, obviously, there was more to the monster than just a very creepy moving cloud of smoke. And those of you in TiVo land, and especially those of you who are tipped off by the last official podcast where Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse said, you know, have your TiVo and pause buttons ready. When that monster showed up and it started flashing and making little, you know, whizzing sounds, there was definitely a lot of stuff to be seen in there. And very quickly, folks on the forums started screen capping, you know, taking pictures and freezing all of the things that we saw during that very brief encounter with the monster. And definitely there were things to be seen in that cloud.
Well, a crucifix. I kind of caught the crucifix.
Yeah, you could. That one came kind of clear, and that one I think was something that we saw in Mr. Echo's flashback in the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and it. You know, it's a very heavy figure in his life because of all the things that have gone on.
That's true.
And I guess there were a lot of faces.
Yeah, there were faces, the women's faces, men's faces. I mean, the face of, I think, the guy who got shot, the face of his brother, I think. There was a woman that some folks said was the woman selling the statues in front of the church. And, you know, just, yeah, lots of faces were in there. We saw Echo as a kid. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, clearly what this cloud was showing was Echo's life or, you know, his recent history. And although the question I think, is, you know, was what we were seeing in the cloud what Mr. Echo was seeing in the cloud? Was he seeing himself flashing back? Or were we seeing what the cloud was seeing inside Mr. Echo?
Yeah, like, was it reading his memories? Was it, you know, was it finding out through his memories what kind of a person he is?
Or was it showing him what kind of a person he is? So I don't know. I mean, that, but it was chock full of clues, chock full of blurry shots. One thing that was really significant, I thought, is that one of the scenes that do flash in that cloud is of Mr. Echo coming out of the water in the crash sequence from the other 48 days. You know, when he comes out in his coat and white shirt, we see that in the cloud, but of all of the shots that we see in that cloud, that picture is upside down.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And, I mean, my feeling on that is maybe it's because that event in Mr. Echo's past happened after the crash, or after, you know, some transitional moment. So just like how Mr. Walt is talking backwards, you know, Mr. Echo's scene after the crash, coming out of the water, that's why it's upside down in the cloud.
But, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I gotta say, I mean, talk about pivotal moments in the show. Getting the orientation film was a big one. I mean, it was like, okay, folks, here's a bigger picture of what might be happening. But, boy, they weren't kidding when they were gonna say you were getting a good look at the monster.
Yeah, it was such a big moment, and you're kind of not even really expecting it, you know? It just kind of comes out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, I was surprised at how much they showed. I mean, clearly they haven't explained what the monster is. I mean, so there's no answers there, but you got, you know, as far as how it acts and what it does and clearly what it might be doing, there's a heap of clues. And for those who like the sci-fi elements of the show, this is, you know, payoff time.
Yeah, that's right up your alley, guys.
But I don't know. I mean, if you were thinking that it might be something really conventional or something easy to explain, like some of the creators have said, it might kind of throw you off a little, I think. But definitely, those 10 seconds are going to be picked apart probably just as thoroughly as the orientation film was. A big, big clue in this episode.
Well, one thing that I remember is Mr. Echo and Locke having that conversation where Mr. Echo says, "Don't mistake coincidence for fate."
That's right. He's sort of making fun of Locke in a way, because Locke is like, everything happens for a reason. What are the odds? This obviously had to happen. And, you know, Mr. Echo goes, hey, you know, it could just be coincidence.
But, you know, Echo was going to end up on the island if he had been on the plane. You know, the plane crashed. He would have ended up on the island, but he escaped that fate by not getting on the plane. But he ends up on the island anyway.
That's right. He clearly, one way or another, Mr. Echo was going to end up on the island.
So is it coincidence or is it fate?
I mean, clearly the way that Mr. Echo was rattled, I think that he's going to be shaken in that way. You know, maybe there might be some other forces at play here. And definitely if he was seeing his own life flashed back at him by the monster, there's a lot more going on than I think he can, than his current theology can explain. The closing montage was something that I liked a lot. I mean, obviously with the recitation of the 23rd Psalm and the various scenes, it was kind of a heart, you know, rending moment. And it was interesting because of the contrast that we were shown. I mean, we were shown Ana Lucia getting a peace offering, kind of making peace there.
Yeah, because like, it's the Christian thing to do.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Jin and Sun, you know, forgave Ana and you know, we're very Christian and very giving.
Hurley doing the right thing or being a good person by helping his neighbor, his new neighbor, by helping Libby build her shelter. And, you know, Jack being the doctor and still being at peace with Sawyer despite the tension there. He walks up and smiles to check out Sawyer's new haircut and gives him the pills that he needs to get better.
Mm-hmm.
But after we see those three scenes of turning the other cheek or doing the right thing, we get the opposite of that. We get Claire
just totally rejecting Charlie, kind of taking away from him the kind of faith that he had that he'd get some kind of peace, that everything would be okay, you know?
Right, you know, He rejected his drugs and tried to get on the right path. He wants to be someone who can take care of somebody, whether it's Claire or Aaron. And what has just happened is that one thing that he wants to be able to take care of somebody was yanked away. Claire's not going to forgive him. Claire pushes him away. And, you know, definitely in contrast to those other things, it was very clear that black and white that they're making there. And now Charlie is definitely going to be, I think, heading down a dark, dark path.
Yeah, I mean, he has to resort to the one thing that, you know, will always be there for him. And, you know, there's plenty of it. His heroin, you know?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, that kind of shows that he's had other motives going on, because he didn't just have one statue. He had lots of statues. But, you know, he had said earlier in the episode that he just liked having them because they made him feel safe. I think that obviously now he's going to turn to them for something else.
Right.
All right. But, well, that's our 2 cents on the 23rd Psalm. Although, you know, there's probably a lot of other loose change left to count. We'd like to know what you thought, of course. So please give us a call or send us an email or, you know, post a comment on our site. Speaking of feedback, though, let's move on to You All Everybody, where we've got some thoughts from our awesome listeners. We're going to start this week's feedback segment trying something a little different. Now, here in Hawaii, we see loss several hours behind most folks on the mainland. So in our last show, we invited you to call in right after it airs, particularly those of you on the East Coast, so that maybe we could include your first impressions in our show tonight. You know, as you know, most of our episode-specific feedback shows up in the following week's transmission. It's kind of the nature of the beast, but through the magic of post-production, we're going to include now the first few Lost Line messages that we received in the little window between the airing of Lost on the East Coast and here in the middle of the Pacific. Of course, you know, I figure when we do this that many of you are going to cover some of the things that we mentioned and catch some of the same stuff, but chances are you're still going to find a lot of stuff that we missed. We just thought it'd be kind of cool to include some other voices, you know, some extra fresh feedback anyway. So let's do the time warp. Here are some of your comments on tonight's new episode.
Hi, guys. This is Robert from Cape Girardeau. And on tonight's episode, I noticed that as they were passing through the black smoke, that there was at least one, possibly more, images that quickly flashed through. And I was wondering what you guys thought of what you saw or didn't see. Just curious. We have a couple ideas of what we felt we saw, but wanted to know what some of the other listeners thought and if anybody else noticed. Keep up the great podcast, and look forward to hearing this week's episode. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Pedro from New Jersey. First-time caller, long-time listener. Got to say, I love the podcast. I just finished watching the first new episode we've had in a while, and I just had some general comments. First, watching the black smoke float around, it did remind me of that book by Michael Crichton, I guess one of the other callers mentioned, called Prey, The Nanobots. However, I have my doubts about that theory because of the timeline. There's the technology that's on the island and the fact that it's been there for 20 years leads me to believe there's no way that the Dharma Initiative could have ever created nanotechnology. Also, it seems like the Fuseys, they've had little contact with the others and a lot of contact with the creature, or the nanobots, as they call them. And the Tailies have had no contact with the creature and a lot of contact with the others. Maybe the others are afraid of the creature, and that's why they stay off that side of the island for the most part. I don't know. I guess it's something to think about. Anyways, love the podcast. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Hey there, Ryan and Jen. This is Melissa calling from outside Cleveland, Ohio. Finally have a little bit of Lost trivia that I noticed tonight that I wanted to share with you guys. Just watched the Mr. Echo-centric episode and noticed that when the cloud, the monster, comes up to Echo, as we pan around him, we my husband and I thought we could see something, so we took our VCR and we did a really slow pause through it, and you can actually see images in the cloud. One that looks like a woman, the face of his brother perhaps, and the last thing we noticed is you could see the crucifix right before the cloud disappears. I think there's more in there, so if any of your listeners out there want to check it out, go back through and look at what happens as you pan through the cloud and what things and it sees. It's almost like it's reading a Mr. Echo's mind or something. In any case, we thought that was kind of interesting. Hope that you do too. We're really enjoying the transmission. Keep up the great work. Thanks. Bye.
Hello, Ryan and Jen. My name is Michael, and I'm calling from Kansas. I just watched the new episode, and I have noticed something weird. When Echo was looking at the scum smoke, the monster thing, I noticed when the camera went around and there was around black smoke, and there was like little flashes of light. Each flash showed like a picture from Echo's past. So that was really interesting and weird. And I guess that's the same thing that Locke saw that back in season one. Some of those images were like a church, a woman, and like seemed like a dead man, and some older men. So, yeah, that's all I could see. Just wanted to point that out and see what you guys think. Thank you very much. Love the podcast. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Sandy in Ojai calling, and I just finished watching the episode, 23rd Psalm, and oh my goodness, what a great episode, and I'd like to thank everyone on the fuselage for the great screen caps of the monster. I have TiVo, but I couldn't do justice to all of those that had downloaded, and I just have to let you know that it was just so incredibly busy on the internet that I could barely get on the fuselage because there were so many people that kept saying, I kept getting messages that the server was too busy. So it was really nice to see that a lot of people were as excited and happy as I was to see the monster. And when I saw that, I just couldn't get the movie The Abyss out of my mind. I mean, remember when that thing came out of the water and it had a face and everything? Well, the smoke was just like right in front of Echo, and I expected the smoke to take on the face of Echo any minute. But instead, we got pictures of his mind. It was like the monster was scanning his brain, and I can't understand why, you know, to identify him and to see if he is a good person. So thanks to Damon and Carlson, who were so right about recording, and I'm going to go back and watch it again now. And right now I'm like so mixed up, I don't know what to think. I'm thinking maybe the island is just one big, huge computer, and I would really like to know who's mining the store. Thanks, Ryan and Jen. This is Sandy in Ojai. Aloha.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. My name is Matt. I'm from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I love the show. It's quite addicting, or your podcast is quite addicting. Last night's episode was one of my favorites so far, especially when it came to them showing the monster. With the screenshots of Echo's past life, from the crucifix to him as a child, the person he shot, it's pretty revealing. I guess what it comes down to, though, is the monster is either one or two things. He's either supernatural or some crazy technology. If it's supernatural, I guess the show really is a purgatory theory. I don't know if that's really where the show is going to go, though, because if you think about it, Echo had clearly repented, and the monster would then kill him so he could go to heaven, but it didn't. It allowed him to go on. So I think that takes away from the people that are saying it's purgatory. And in regards to it being some kind of crazy technology, like nanobots, yeah, that's great. But as I think you had said, Jen, it's going to be disappointing in the long run because it could easily be used to explain so many different things in the future. And I think overall people are going to be disappointed if that's what it ends up being. So great episode, but I'm a little worried about where we're going to go in the future. So thanks a lot. Keep up the great work. Bye.
So that was some early feedback from tonight's episode. Thanks to all of our early callers.
Thanks, folks.
Of course, we hope that there will be a lot more from all of you, and that'll come next week.
And of course, next week we can try it again. Again, give us a call right after it airs, and maybe we'll be able to include your call in the same episode. Now we're going to turn to the transmission inbox. Talk of the other stories that might be linked to Lost continues. A listener called our attention to a short story by Stephen King called The Langoliers, which was also made into a TV miniseries.
The creators have definitely stated that Stephen King is a big influence, most notably his book The Stand. But yeah, The Langoliers is about a mysterious airplane flight and a colorful mix of passengers who have to figure out what's going on their flight. It was also pointed out that one character name that Stephen King has used in more than one story is Toomey, which was also the name of the man who Hurley's friend Leonard was with when they first heard the numbers.
That's right.
Sam Toomey, his name was, the guy in the listening post. Hurley went to visit Mrs. Toomey in Australia.
So that definitely sounds like a shout out there to Stephen King. We also got an email from Kate in Michigan who saw parallels to the Agatha Christie mystery novel, and then there were none. In that story, you know, it was a train, not a plane, but again, you have people brought together, in that case by a mysterious character named Mr. Owen. But and then there were none, these people are slowly killed off as punishments for crimes in their past. So, you know, in that book, the characters also have flashbacks, as in Lost. And in that story by Agatha Christie, there's a doctor. The doctor is accused of operating on someone while drunk and killing her, like our Christian Shepherd. There's a corrupt policeman, a former soldier like Said or maybe Locke, and a pregnant woman.
I guess those aren't really, uncommon types of characters.
True.
The creator specifically mentioned The Stand, and as we talked about before, there were a lot of direct parallels between characters there, too.
That's true. But, you know, it's still fun to think about. Another story that we've discussed on our show was Forbidden Planet. And in our Lost Line segment at the end of this show, we've got two calls from listeners on that link as well. It's definitely a link that was pretty explicit in Lost, though, because in one scene in the first season, we see Charlie actually wearing a Forbidden Planet t-shirt. Now, during the hiatus, we also got a familiar question from Dylan.
Hello, Ryan and Jen. This is me, your good friend, Dylan Miller. I'm from the UP. I love your show. Listen to it every week. This question doesn't really have to do with any of the episodes or anything, but you probably got this question before, but how long do you think the show will be going on? Do you think it could last maybe another 5, 6, 7 years? Or do you think it'd be over? You think it will be over maybe 3? Just wondering. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Dylan. Well, that exact question came up in the Lost seminar that we attended in October.
That's right.
Jack Bender talked about an article that Stephen King had written, and Stephen King had said, quote, "Kill it when it's over. Kill it before it dies. The studio, the network, the audience will want it for years, but don't listen to us. When it's run its course, let it go and be brilliant." He said that they've got a few great seasons in them, for sure, but they probably won't be running around in the jungle in 5 years.
That's right. Jack Bender actually said, you know, I really don't see Hurley filling out Walt's college applications and putting them in bottles and throwing them in the ocean. And Harold Perrineau said that you'll definitely know when Lost has gone too far if Pam Anderson suddenly shows up on the island. But interestingly, just this week, an article came out interviewing Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, and it seemed to say that they probably couldn't, you know, kill it before it dies, even if they wanted to.
Right. Here's what Damon Lindelof said. "The reality is that Carlton, myself, JJ, the creative brains behind the Lost universe, we could all band together and say we're ending the show after 3 seasons because that's the arc. They get off the island and we reveal all the things we want to reveal. And the network would say, no, you won't. They will hire somebody and just do Lost with or without you."
You know, it was an interesting article about how a TV series, you know, just can't work like a movie or a complete story, you know, with a beginning and an end. You know, Carlton Cuse said, you know, we're not in control of the end point.
Right. So you might not get all of the answers. So don't obsess about the destination and just enjoy the ride.
That's right. And there were mentions of Alias as well. You know, some of the clues, some of the stories were just really hard to explain, but it's the journey, you know, it's the trip that matters. But, well, I guess, what do you think, though? How long do you think Lost has got?
I don't know. The way things are going, at the pace they're going, ideally, I would say probably 3 more seasons. I think that's ample time for them to wrap up some of the mysteries, to flesh out the characters a little bit more, and not go places we don't really want them to go. You know, I'm watching Alias now, and then I can kind of see where it took a turn where they could have ended it, but they kept going and it really wasn't the right decision. And I'm really hoping it doesn't get to be that way with Lost.
Right.
If they have to move it beyond where they want it to go, I hope they're able to work it out where everything still makes sense and it's still logical. And it's still fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, the article was really interesting. I mean, it basically says, you know, you're not going to get all the answers. And you know, when have we ever given you everything you wanted to know? And it's basically impossible. And yeah, the limitations of a TV series are like that. But, you know, they have said, I think, that they were thinking about maybe 5 seasons when they were charting it all out.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that kind of worries me is that, you know, season one just kind of moved along at a good pace. It was a good jog. I was like, great, you know, this series is really, really moving. And as much as I love season two, I do love season two, I seriously feel like from episode one of season two, they just slammed on the brakes. Like, we went from 50 miles an hour to 35 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, we've been in, this is like, what, the 12th episode?
Right.
And we've gone like 3 days.
Well,
it's been like 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, the first episodes of the season, I think 3 of them all started over from the same point. So that was kind of repetitive. And then the other 48 days, although it was a great episode, one of your favorites, I think,
mm-hmm.
That again was basically a recap. I mean, as far as moving the timeline in the show, we've kept going back and back and back. So in a way, I was starting to worry that, you know, they're trying to stretch things out now. They're already in Hamburger Helper land. Although, honestly, tonight's episode was pretty good.
Yeah, and it was absolutely worth waiting for, like I said.
So know. Hopefully they keep up the pace, and we're not going to be doing too many of those backtracks.
Finally, we learned something interesting from listener Eric in Montreal, Quebec, where he said it was minus 24 degrees centigrade when he wrote us. Anyway, he said that since he's a hardcore fan, he's watching Lost live with everybody else in North America. However, he said most of his friends wait until the French dubbed version of the episode comes out a year later. And he's noticed that Lost has kind of gotten tangled for them. He writes, in French, they have a problem with Danielle and everything around her. Why? She's French. Everybody on the island is speaking French for us here, so how come nobody understands the message that Shannon translated from the radio, the song Beyond the Sea, things like that? Well, here, everything that was in French when Lost was in English is now in German.
In German? That's cool. I mean, you know, so I guess that makes her the crazy German woman to everyone else. And, you know, I don't know. Does that mean in Charlie, in the episode where they hear Danielle's message, does he jump up and down and say, you know, I've never been so happy to hear the Germans?
Oh, I guess. I hadn't thought about that. But anyway, Eric mentioned that the creators have talked about a possibility of an all-French episode.
That's right.
So that might mean a show entirely in German for them.
Good golly. So it gets really complicated because they're using, you know, language as part of the plot. Yeah, I guess that's a question that we might put out to our international listeners out there. As I know, you know, Lost has fans around the world, even in countries where Lost doesn't air. Eric asked specifically, you know, how Jin and Sun's Korean-speaking scenes are handled for Korean audiences, for example. So, hey, you know, we're curious. If you're a Lost fan in a non-English-speaking place, let us know how these different languages are handled.
Though I think we're going to need you to write or speak English for us, of course.
That's true. That's true. You know what? That's actually it for what we thought and what some of you had to say. Now, folks, it's time to look ahead.
We are now entering the forward cabin. This is where we talk about stuff from behind the scenes or stuff yet to be seen on the show. We'll talk about upcoming episodes, production news, articles, and more. So if you're living spoiler-free, you're going to want to skip this part of the transmission.
Hey, before we look at what's coming up on the show, we've got a few tidbits to pass along. First, we've got a little bit of news on Lost filming work here in Honolulu. Just today, we got word from our friend John at TalkStink.com that they're filming at the Bob's Big Boy restaurant in Mapunapuna. No details yet on what flashback that is, but we're definitely going to keep an eye on that one. But much more locally, it turns out that Lost was filming right here in Mililani earlier this week.
Yep, in Mililani Mauka. And we got lots of great on-the-spot reports from our friend and neighbor, John. They were apparently using one of the model homes over there, and it was a Sawyer flashback.
Yeah, they were filming there for a couple of days, and John went to check things out both nights. And he said that last night, the last day of shooting out here, Josh Holloway actually came out to mingle with the fans who'd gathered on the street. He was signing autographs and taking pictures, and of course, John got a picture with him as well. It was quite a scene, and he said most of the fans that were gathered and squealing were very excited girls in their early teens.
He also said that there were pigs.
Pigs, that's right. There were little piggies in the yard. There was a mama pig and a bunch of baby pigs. And John said that they were almost as popular as Josh to some of the younger fans.
Well, that's cool because we know that Sawyer's like animal on the island seems to be the boar.
That's right. That's right. He's got pigs coming too. That's great. Yeah, you know, so thanks again to John for his dispatches from the front lines. John runs the HawaiiClothingCompany.com website, and, you know, if you ever want to buy some Hawaiian-style clothes that a local might actually wear, you should definitely check out his site.
We also have a couple of fun cat sightings to pass along. Mm-hmm. Adriano in San Pedro, California, emailed us moments after his lost cat sighting in Redondo Beach. He was on his way to work, and he stopped into a Starbucks when who should he see but Terry O'Quinn. Mm. He didn't want to make a scene, so he just said hello, and he got a very lock-like hello back. Adriano said Terry O'Quinn looked just like a regular old Joe getting a cup of, well, you know. So thanks, Adriano, for telling us about your close encounter.
Another California sighting a few weeks earlier came from Mike from Glendale. He said that he and his wife were actually at a Green Day show at the Wiltern Theater, and they ended up on the floor right up against the stage, and, well, naturally, a mosh pit developed. Well, Mike said that one of the moshers kept throwing himself up against the folks in front and, of course, at him, and just when he was about to turn around and shove the guy back, the mosher put his hands on Mike's shoulders and said, you know, "Don't worry, dude, I'm not trying to mess with you." And he and his wife immediately recognized that it was Matthew Fox.
Mm.
Although, you know, they called him Jack. Mike said that Foxy was very cool to them for the rest of the night, and that it looked like he was really having a great time. So that's a really neat story, Mike.
Who'd have thought Dr. Jack would jump in a mosh pit?
Well, you know, I don't know. That tattoo kind of says that there might be a wilder side to him. Finally, we got this great little clip from a couple of radio guys in Arizona. CK and Shu do a radio show, and they were actually in Vegas for the Radio Music Awards. Well, folks, they ran into Walt there, and, you know, they tried to get some answers out of him. So here they are.
Hey guys, this is Shu from Tucson, Arizona. I do a radio show with my buddy CK. It's called CK and the Bad Boy Broadcast here on Hot 98.3. We recently went to the Radio Music Awards in Vegas and had the chance to sit down with Malcolm. Not sure if it was a slip, but it was a confirmation that the others did take him. You can hear the pause as he looks over at his manager like, uh-oh, I wasn't really supposed to talk about stuff, was I?
When you look at the first season, right, you're definitely right there in the picture with the cast. Now, in the right, second season, you're not in the picture with the cast. Is there any significance that you can talk about with that? And how come your role is so small this season?
If you remember, I was taken by the others.
Yes, you were, by the others.
On the boat.
So, oh, wait, he just said it. He was taken by the others. He was taken by the others.
It's already given.
No, it's not given. We're not for sure. We never even met these people yet. Okay? We haven't met it. So any ounce of information that we could sneak, you should have said we were taken by the boat people. Then I'd have been like, were they the others? And you should have said, nah, I'm not sure if they're the others. But now that you said they were taken by the others, so you were taken by the others. Go ahead. Keep on talking, Malcolm. What's going on? So you were taken by the others.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it.
So back to the significance of you not being in the season two picture.
Right. I can't tell you.
Oh,
there you have it. A confirmation from a cast member. Definitely the one that was taken by the others. We probably already knew that, but out of the little kid's mouth is always the best. From CK and Shu, we'll keep listening to the podcast. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you very much, Shu. That was great. It was great to hear Malcolm again.
Yeah, it was good to hear him talking forwards again.
That's true. Although I really do think that his friend was right. We actually already knew that it was the others that took Walt. You know, not that it helps any because we don't know who the others are or, you know, which of the other people we've met on the islands are those others. But, you know, and we've also heard folks speculate that there are probably more than one kind of other there as well.
Malcolm didn't want to say why he's missing in action, though.
No, that's right. He can't say. And, you know, I guess that might not bode well for his character, but hopefully it means some big twist this season involving him. We certainly seem to be leading up to that. All right, so on to the future. First things first, what did the teaser this week say was coming up next week on Lost?
Well, Michael goes postal.
That's right. He knocks out Locke and Locke and Jack in the bunker and goes running off. And Hurley says he's gone all commando.
And Jack and friends decide to go after him, but I guess Kate is not coming along.
Yeah, he says, "You're not coming with us." And that, of course, is a typical Kate scene there.
Mm-hmm.
We hear a gunshot ring out. Locke says that he's lost his trail. But then a big scene, it looks like.
They stumble kind of into a clearing in the woods, and they're all illuminated by this really bright ring of fire.
Yeah, just almost like some kind of tribal scene. A ring of fire erupts, and we hear a voice.
This is our island.
Holy cow. I mean, good golly, that'd be a heck of a new development as far as contact with the others. So we definitely can't wait. Moving to more details, though, what are the next few episodes that we know about?
Well, next week's episode is episode 11. It's a Jack-centric episode, and it's called The Hunting Party. Chrissy, once again, came through with the scoops from the TV Guide for next week.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Yeah, thanks, Chrissy. Matthew Fox was interviewed and asked specifically about the January 18th episode. Foxy says that Jack is egotistical, and after somehow curing Sarah, he takes on another case that would require another miracle. And in going for that, he loses the one thing most important to him, which is Sarah.
Hmm.
That's tied to what's going on the island when Jack is trying to stop Michael from going out to look for Walt. Basically, he has a hard time accepting when he's not in control.
Yeah. Well, we also mentioned last week that we're supposed to learn how Jack's issues with Sarah mean bad news for Kate. And Foxy definitely confirms that Jack will drift away from Kate and toward Ana Lucia. I guess especially after feeling that Kate betrays him in next week's episode.
I bet the CAC shippers are all up in arms over this.
Or the Jake shippers. Yeah, they're probably not going to be happy about that. Matthew Fox also speculated that the overall direction of season 2 will get more Lord of the Flies. He said people are going to turn more inward, more selfish, and definitely more dark. He also said that he thought it would make sense if we lose even more survivors.
MC Gainey is in this one, too, the bearded man from the boat that took Walt.
Right, we had mentioned that. There's also some hints as to what the message on the computer meant when someone makes a chilling return. I guess that could be, again, MC Gainey, the bearded man, or it could be Walt. Now, a listener that I'll call RG sent us what he said is a script page from The Hunting Party, a production draft dated December 11th, when he says the episode was called Cartography. You know, even he admitted it's kind of hard to confirm if this is a real script page, but, you know, I thought I'd tell you about it anyway. It's a scene at the caves when Michael is collecting guns and supplies and is about to head out to look for his son. Mr. Echo mentions the power source that they found at the Arrow Bunker, and Michael says that he could follow cables to find his son. Locke reminds Saeed that they have a map, Danielle's map, and in the script there's actually a short flashback for Danielle showing her, I guess, years before drawing the map and, you know, humming the La Mer song. It's definitely good creative writing, you know, even if the script page isn't real, but, you know, we're definitely going to find out if it was next week.
Episode 12, airing January 25th, is titled Fire and Water, and it focuses on Charlie. We're going to go back to when Charlie and his brother Liam were kids. On the island, we're going to have another surreal dream sequence where Aaron, Claire's son, is threatened and some sparks between Hurley and Libby ignite.
Yep, the Hurley and Libby thing. On the dream thing, one of our listeners, Allison from Ontario, Canada, pointed out that many of the dreams that we've seen so far have come true and generally in a bad way. You know, Boone dreams of Shannon getting killed, and Shannon does die. Claire dreams about someone trying to hurt her baby, and she and Charlie are taken by Ethan. Locke dreamed about the drug plane and seeing Boone covered in blood, and that obsession with finding the plane led to Boone's death. Even Shannon's visions of Walt, Allison points out, leads her to her death. So I guess it's a good bet that Aaron is definitely in danger.
Dominic Monaghan told E! Online that we're going to see a lot of Charlie, but that he's heading down a really dark path. He'll start to feel like he's losing his grip on his relationship with Claire and Aaron, and his old addiction will push him toward further self-destruction.
A couple of new names were added to the guest list for Fire and Water 2. Vanessa Branch as Karen and Craig Young as director. A notable exception from these ABC cast lists, however, would be Charlie and Liam's father. Now, Sam G at the Fuselage said that he knows the woman playing their mother, and he said that he was pretty sure that the dad was a big part of the flashbacks, a person, Mr. Pace, who was a butcher by trade, but so far there's no official mention of him at all. So that's pretty curious.
Mm. Nothing concrete on the next set of episodes, but a lot of interesting reports out there on both Secret Agent Man at Television Without Pity and Hercules at the Fuselage say episode 13 is Locke-centric. We just might learn why he was in a wheelchair.
Finally, Hercules says that the casting sheet for this one includes a character named Jonathan, a nerdy guy who sounds a little bit like our next artist, and another character named Mac, who is apparently an other. Finally, though, get this, it also calls for twins, all males age 20 to 30.
Very interesting. You know, Jonathan kind of matches what one of our callers pointed out about the names, like Ethan, Desmond, Goodwin, Calvin, they kind of sound alike.
That's right. So maybe Jonathan is Mr. Arts, or maybe Jonathan is a Goodwin. And I was just thinking about that comment, actually. Aaron also matches that trend. Episode 14 is said to be a Saeed flashback episode titled One of Them. Citing casting sheets again, our forum friends say that there'll be a George Clooney-type CIA agent named Inman, a couple of Iraqi officers, and Khaled, Saeed's brother.
Things are unclear for episode 15, originally described as a Claire episode titled Maternity Leave. Hercules said it's been swapped out in favor of a Sawyer-centric episode, finally, titled The Plunge. In addition to all the ladies, Mary Jo, who was a lottery girl and Sawyer's girlfriend, played by Brittany Perrineau, Kim Dickens and Jolene Blaylock were supposed to see Hibbs again, as well as a big bad con man named Jackson.
You know, I've read several references to a mysterious phone call in that episode as well. I guess finally for the Claire episode, if it is pushed back to one, maternity leave, we mentioned last week that Secret Agent Man's report that we're going to meet a new character, a 16-year-old girl named Jessica, who is discovered on the island and is described as being one with nature.
Gotta be Alex.
It's gotta be Alex. Hey, folks, other than that, that's it for this episode of The Transmission. You know, The Transmission is made possible only through the support, encouragement, and feedback from its awesome listeners like you. So, thank you.
Mahalo, everyone. It's great to be back, and we do hope that you'll let us know what you think about tonight's episode and what you think about anything else, really. Please call our Lost Line at 808-356-0127 with any comments, questions, theories, cast sightings, or just talk story.
You can also send us an audio file or email message at to us at lost@hawaiiup.com. That's lost@hawaiiup.com, or post a comment on our site at hawaiiup.com/lost. At our site, you can also find information about our show, the link for the enhanced version of our podcast, a map of the transmission listeners around the world, and my humble list of Lost filming locations. Now, some Lost Line calls are coming up, but we're signing off.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Aloha.
Aloha.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. This is Daniel from Shreveport, Louisiana, and I was just calling in to give you a few comments. I just found your podcast, actually, because I just got an iPod and iTunes and all that, and just found it searching the podcast, and I love Lost. It's my favorite show, so I've been listening to y'all. I listened to TheoryCast, and then most recently your new episode about the websites, and I'm really enjoying it, and it's filling the void. It's been left, you know, with this 6-week long hiatus, which is going on too long, but it's about to be over. So, anyways, there was a website that I didn't hear y'all talk about that I just found today, actually, when I was listening to your podcast, and it's at channel4.com, and I'll send the link because it's kind of long, but it's a really cool Flash animation site, and it's kind of similar to OceanicFlay15.com, and but you have to like get through it. It's like an interactive thing, and it's really cool. But I'll send y'all that link, and but y'all might like to look at that. And I didn't know if y'all had known about that. Darren Aronofsky, the director of Requiem for a Dream and Pi, will be directing an episode of Lost coming in May, I think. Because I heard y'all talking about Charlie's upcoming episode, I thought it might be that one, and I got really excited, but went online, and everyone was saying that it was going to be in May, so, but I don't know if y'all ever seen any of his movies, but they're really good, and he's a real visual director, and all that stuff. But anyways, and I was listening to the theories, and I don't really have a grand scheme theory, because I don't really want to speculate, because if it's something different than what I think it's going to be, then I'm going to be disappointed, and I don't really want to be disappointed. So I'm just kind of going to see where it goes, and of course I'll have my thoughts and everything, but just a thought I had from something that someone was talking about the other day about Rousseau, and something that I haven't really heard many people talk about much is her son, Alex. And, like, I know on Exodus she explained how he had been taken, and that's why she took Claire's baby. And so my thinking is, you know, she's been there for 16 years, and if they took him, then they still have him, and he, you know, if we don't know anything else, and he's still alive. And so I thought that was a cool thought. You know, they might play that later on this season, or maybe in the next season, that he might be one of the others. But anyways, so that's it, and just wanted to call and comment. So I love your show, and I'll be listening to a new episode soon. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. This is Jessica calling again, and I'm calling in response to one of your callers from the last Lost on the Web podcast, and he mentioned that he thought that Rousseau was possibly the mole in the fuselage camp of survivors. And that reminds me that we noticed earlier that she had the scratches on her arm, and that's how Claire remembered her, and we haven't really heard much more about that, and that obviously connects her with Ethan because he also had the scratches. I haven't heard anything more about that connection, whether or not that suggests that she's part of the others or not. I just haven't heard that connection anywhere. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hey, Ryan and Jen. My name is Lindsay, and I'm from Edinburgh, Scotland. First of all, I'd just like to say, although the UK is a season behind y'all, I'm one of those people who really wants to find out what's going on in the future episodes, so it's been great to listen to your podcast. I was thinking about the whole Walt appearing to Shannon thing. Someone said on a previous podcast that the writers had said that if someone has died, that's them dead, they're never going to come back. So this must mean that Walt is still alive. I did find it weird that he kept appearing to Shannon, though. I was just wondering why he hadn't been appearing to Michael. Although, saying that, Walt and Shannon seem to have quite a special bond. After all, it is Shannon that Walt leaves Vincent with. Anyways, just wondering what your thoughts were on that. Thanks for the great podcast. I was in Honolulu in the summer, so it's great to hear the mahalos and alohas again. Thanks, and bye.
Hello, Ryan and Jen. This is Mark from Washington, D.C. I used to live in Honolulu, so listening to you guys really brings back that aloha spirit. I noticed a striking similarity between the plot of a movie called Forbidden Planet back in the 1950s, where an alien technology had the ability through electromagnetic type machinery to take their collective consciousness and create monsters. However, the intention was to do the better things, do things for the good of their civilization. However, they destroyed themselves with this technology. It reminds me very much of what's going on in Lost, especially when they mention the incident in the orientation film. Keep it up. I like the show. Thank you.
Hey, guys. This is Eric calling from Orange County, California. Your show is great, and I think it's very, very professional the way you handle it. I had a quick thought about the monster that we're going to see in the upcoming episode. There's a movie from 1956 starring Leslie Nielsen, the guy in all the airplane movies, in a dramatic role. It's called The Forbidden Planet, and in that movie, there is a monster that is controlled telepathically by kind of the leader of the planet and a machine in conjunction together with each other. And it kind of terrorizes the people and keeps them all in check through, you know, fear tactics. And what I'm thinking is, because we've seen the monster in a couple of the episodes of Lost, we've only really seen it rip up trees and kind of like the disastrous effects of it. And it seems to be mechanical or not quite tangible and definitely not visible. And so I'm thinking it's something along those lines. Anyways, that's all I got, and keep up the good work.
Hey, Ryan and Jen, this is Kyle from a small town in Oklahoma. I was just calling to tell you that I love your podcast. I'm just a recent fan of Lost. I rented the first season of Lost after I finally decided to give in and watch it because, oh, Dominic Monaghan was in it, and I love Lord of the Rings, so I thought, well, you know, it's worth a shot. And I loved the first season, and I continued to watch, you know, the second season as it came on. This was probably, you know, September, so I think it was before it came on, but I'm not sure. But anyways, so I've been watching the second season, and I love your podcast. All the information has been great, and all the theories, and just, it's been a really amazing to hear all of it, and I'm excited for more. I just wanted to comment on a few things. You know, personally, I kind of, character-wise, I kind of miss the character of Boone because he was probably my favorite in the first season, and the absence of him is kind of a weird little absence there, but, you know, that's kind of personal grievances aside. I just wanted to comment on how much I love the second season as a season.
Aloha from Wisconsin. Hi, guys. My name is Orion. And I was just discovering your podcast. I really like it so far. And I forget which episode it was in because I've been listening to them all together. But recently you discussed for a couple minutes the orientation video, and you didn't bring up an important point, so I wanted to make sure that you and your listeners didn't miss it. The section of the video that they spliced in is clearly from a different video. If you look at it, Dr. Candle in the new section, his hair is shorter, it's combed a different direction, he's wearing a different tie and a different lab coat because the lapel is a different size. And there is an exit sign in the background that has the arrow changed directions. So what that means, I have no idea. But, you know, I'm thinking that there's more pieces still that we haven't seen to that video. And so there's obviously still a mystery there. And I also wanted to throw out one of my own theories about what's going on the island. We've seen this recurring theme of black and white and good versus evil and whatnot. You have the black and white stones that were on Adam and Eve, Claire's dream with the black and white eyes, so on and so forth. I think that there are actually two forces on the island. I think there's two different groups of people, and we haven't been shown yet who belongs to what group, but I think there's a group of people that would represent the black and a group of people that would represent the white, you know. So we'd have to learn more before we could determine who's good guys and who's bad guys. But I think there's two different groups of people or forces on the island that are causing all these mysterious events to happen. So there you go. Keep up the good work, and I'll keep listening. Thanks.
Hi, it's Mike from Honolulu. Great podcast. I listen to it every week. I'm calling about, I know a lot of people have questions about the timeline and stuff and theories about time travel. And just something I noticed last season, sometimes Shannon was talking about the broadcast that she heard, and she translated the French lyrics, and it was Beyond the Sea, which is a song that's played at the end of Finding Nemo, the Disney. It's played in English on the movie, though, over the credits. But she tells another character, I can't remember who it was, but she translates it, and she says, you know, it's the song that they played at the end of that fish movie, obviously referring to Finding Nemo. And that Finding Nemo came out in 2003, so that kind of tells me that the whole thing is really modern times. There's no time travel involved or any kind of, I don't know, space warps or anything like that. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw my two bits in. Thanks. Bye.
Hi, Ryan and Jen. I'm a listener of your Lost Transmission podcast. I love the show. It's great and everything. And, I mean, it's up there. It should be the number one. And I was just wondering if maybe you guys could post this audio file out there. I'm thinking of me and a few of my friends thinking of starting up our own Lost podcast. And we kind of need some help getting the word around. And I've sent this file to Jane, Jack, and Cliff at Generally Speaking. And I don't know. I was just hoping maybe you guys could do that. So keep up the good work. I like the show. Bye.
This podcast is a proud member of the Hawaii Association of Podcasters. To find other great Hawaii podcasts and to learn about podcasting in Hawaii, be sure and visit hawaiipodcasting.com. The Hawaii Association of Podcasters. Spreading aloha to